Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Is there anything worse than having that difficult conversation with a parent or aging friend about giving up the keys to their car? Fortunately for me, my dad came to his own conclusion, probably a bit late, but when he stopped driving, my mom took over. After scaring him half to death a few times, my dad took the car in for some service and told my mom it was unfixable, no more car. My mom was pissed at my dad on her deathbed. Seriously, she was. She was still complaining.
My mother, same as you.
I can't imagine my mom driving them too. But if you think about it, not being able to drive in our society is like losing a huge piece of freedom. What do we do where we don't need to get into a car? Public transportation is non-existent. And when you're 90-something, something like Uber or associated costs, forget about it. Well, our guest today has a win-win answer to this problem. Howard Pearl, welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Well, thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
Howard is the CEO of CARS, Charitable Adult Ride and Services. CARS is a nationally recognized nonprofit that supports thousands of nonprofits and public media stations in the U.S. and Canada through turnkey vehicle and real estate donation programs. Amongst all the accolades and awards, CARS is a recent winner of the BBB Torch Award for Ethics. Howard has been a highly successful CEO across multiple industries with a proven record of raising capital, overseeing product development, improving operational efficiency, and building strategic partnerships. Howard, thanks for coming in today. I know you're a very busy man.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be recognized for some of the things you do. However, you make it sound like it's really grandiose.
It is grandiose.
Well, you know, it's just what you do every day, right? It's one foot in front of the other. You never know where the next foot's going to land.
That is the process. It's great to have a plan, but then life shows up.
Well, that's what they say when you're in the military, right? There is no plan that survives first contact.
Exactly. So a quick question to you.
Yeah.
What's the behind? Why did you decide to get into this business? You were a for-profit CEO. Now you're in the nonprofit side. What's the story behind Howard?
Well, I wasn't struck by a bolt of lightning one morning and said, I want to give up my entire lifestyle. Frankly, I don't want to say coerced, but I was heavily massaged into taking on a very temporary challenge, which was to help this organization find a new CEO. They felt it was time to find someone.
Oh, they did the old switch and bait on you.
What would grow it and would I help? Would I run it for a short period of time? And I took a 45 to 60 day assignment to help them do that and step in the meantime
and here
help
you
transition
are.
The old guy. Yeah. And it was as simple as this, you know, when the wives get involved, right? So I kept coming home and I was pretty excited about what I was doing. I really found a group of people that were ready, willing, and able to soldier on. And I kept coming home and my mother, we were just talking about having
moms
to take away the keys.
Right.
And I was the one that took my mom's keys away. So now you got her top of mind. But my wife said, you know, you've been ridiculously happy the last couple of weeks. What's going on? And I said, well, you know, this kind of, and it was the first time I'd actually used the word mission. I said, this mission that this company is on, it's really spectacular. And the people, they're so ready and willing and capable. They just need some new leadership. And what they're doing, it's touching my heart. And she said, well, why don't you stay? And I said, well, they haven't asked me to stay. It's just, this is a temporary assignment. And she looked at me like all wise women and wise wives saying, do and said, you're an idiot. I'm pretty sure if you tell them you'd like to stay, they'd like to keep you. You've got a reasonable resume. You maybe got a shot at the job. So anyway, one thing led to the other. And of course, she was right. I decided to stay for a little bit beyond my 45 days. And that's almost 9 years.
That's how it goes.
And I can honestly say I've never been happier with a decision in my life. It's an incredible opportunity and some incredible people across the country, not just our own staff, which obviously I'm appreciative of. You know, we have single-digit turnover, most of which is in the call center area as opposed to senior people, number one. And two, when I look at the people that we work with across the country and how they touch humanity in this country, it is probably one of the most fulfilling things I've done. It has transitioned my own life in many, many, many ways.
Oh, I love that. Although you're kind of scaring me a little bit here. So my wife runs a nonprofit in PB, and part of the nonprofit, there's a social enterprise. And so, of course, I'm the outside strategic guide for all her stuff or whatever.
Yep, yep.
And I recently facilitated a retreat for her staff, sort of had that same thing you had, like, wow, these people are amazing and what they're doing and all this kind of thing, right? Really kind of getting on the ground on it. And then I've been looking at myself going, you know, as a consultant, you're always kind of outside looking in. I go, man, I'd like to get more engaged in something. So my wife's got going through a little transition here with the social enterprise. But guess who's getting involved with the street cleaning and PB?
Well, it's a good thing. It's good for our soul. I think, you know, that's one of the values of having a great relationship with your wife is they recognize.
So she's my boss now.
Well, there's no question about that. But I don't know about you. I've been in love with this woman for 37 years and I still like her 37 years later. So there's no question. She's been my boss for 36 and a half of those years, without doubt.
It's not a big transition here, right?
No, it's just, Yeah, it was very good.
Well, talk about cars a little bit. What is cars? What's this look like? Because I know you're doing a couple of different things with cars. It's really intriguing.
Well, thanks for asking. Of course, it's, as I said, become my passion. Cars is an atypical organization in that we raise money for our nonprofit. We are a 501c3. And we raise money for our nonprofit activities by raising money for other nonprofit. We serve just over 10,000 of them at this point, including some of the brands that I'm sure you recognize. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, Shriners, you know, all of the, many of, most of the NPR and PBS stations, along with Red Cross and American Kidney. And so,
so the big ones.
Yeah, a lot of the big ones and many, many, many small ones. And they all get treated the same. They all get the same product, which is we offer a turnkey vehicle donation program. And we don't advertise for ourselves. Nobody would have heard of cars. We're not the guys with the obnoxious jingle. We just serve these organizations by providing the platform underneath. So when you call or go online to donate to Red Cross or go to their website and you want to donate one of these vehicles or, you know, God knows, we get everything from airplanes to farm tractors, even golf carts. It's us that you're dealing with and we'll arrange to pick the vehicle up and no charge to you. And I'm sure everybody's heard the ad at some point or another by some of these organizations. And we take them to local auction yards and auction them off. We like to do it locally, one, because the cost of transportation is less and therefore the nonprofit gets more, but it also serves their local community. And that's working out quite well. We do own some of these auctions, but most of them across the country are, you know, independently owned.
So when you say you own, that means you have enough vehicles to actually put on your own auction? Is that what that means?
Oh, yeah. I think at our highest year, we did about 154,000 vehicles across.
154,000
vehicles
oh,
across.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. These days, we're doing about 2,000 vehicles a week that come in from across. Well, don't forget, it's, you know, 10,000 organizations and from coast to coast. So I don't know that we're the largest, but if we're not, we sort of fight between number one and number two. But the difference is we're not retail. It's all wholesale. We promote the nonprofit. So in addition to that, we have the same program for real estate. Now, most nonprofits like to stay away from real estate because it's complicated and it carries a lot of liability with it and so on. But we have found a way to perfect this. One, again, we do all the marketing for you. We present you with all of the opportunities. But the big thing is we found a way to do this so that there is no liability for the nonprofit. Zero liability, no long-term challenges to deal with, no paperwork to deal with, no tax issues. We do it again. It's turnkey. And that has been really successful. It's amazing, particularly with this generational turnover coming up, where and what these properties look like. Some are small commercial properties, some are large homes, some are small homes, some are vacant properties. It's just, they're coming from everywhere.
And yeah, the wealth transfer over the next 10, 15, 20 years is just going to be crazy, right?
Yeah. And some of them are, the reasons, the rationale are interesting. We had one where a man had four kids and they were fighting over the summer property. And he said, you know what?
I got a better answer.
Like, I'm not going to be responsible for this nonsense with you kids. I'm donating this, which is worse than selling it and keeping the money, right? In their eyes, donated it for a pretty good cause that he was interested in. But he's able to take some of that back. So while he gets the tax deduction for the value of the property, he took $100,000 out of the proceeds, which he will pay normal income on. But he gave $25,000 each of the kids and said, this is your piece of it. Now, to get this, you have to make peace with your brothers and sisters, right?
How'd it work out?
Well, I don't know. After we sent the check, it was beyond.
You're not going to a Thanksgiving dinner with those guys, huh?
Well, I don't know. But I thought it was a pretty innovative way to both support a nonprofit that he was passionate about, but more interestingly, he sort of solved this potential long-term battle with the kids. I think he was pretty thoughtful in how he approached it.
So there's some big tax advantages in this, I'm assuming.
Huge. The thing about real estate is the deduction is equal to the appraised value of the vehicle. It has to be an approved appraiser. So there are a certain number of them that are certified by the government. And so you can take that value as opposed to a vehicle. Minimum you can take is $500. And then beyond that, it's exactly what the vehicle sells for, which makes, you know, makes a lot of sense. And we do all the paperwork on the tax program, beginning and end, even their filing at the end for their, we have to post with the IRS who and what donation and deduction was so that when you file your tax return, it, the two meet somewhere in the middle, God willing. And so on. So it's a lot of fun. And then the other really big program we have, obviously we have a consulting group that goes, you know, anywhere from some of the big ones to the little ones to help them become better fundraisers. So that that group does really well. But the other thing.
So is this kind of across the board fundraising? I mean, something beyond what you guys are doing, just really a whole turnkey in the world of fundraising.
Absolutely. We've just done a work in conjunction with another organization on the Audubon Society and on the Hebrew University in Los Angeles, and we got a lot inside of public media. We do a lot of sort of fundraising, helping, consulting in that arena. And I think our biggest new project is this on-the-go thing, which is providing transportation to seniors across the country. I think we're now in somewhere over 300 cities, plus or minus one or two.
So what does that look like?
Well, we have an arrangement. We have an on-the-go program here locally in San Diego. So maybe a little explanation. All of our money, the money that we profit by, we turn 80% back to the nonprofit that we're working with. So we take very little.
So you take 20% out of the transaction.
We take 20% of the transaction, 10, 11%, 10% runs our organization. Pretty lean, considering. And then the balance goes to JFS in San Diego, who are very big in managing housing, food insecurity, transportation issues and advocacy, diaper programs, and just the myriad of it, right? It's a fairly large organization, has a budget well north of $100 million annually. And so 100% of our proceeds go there. And I think one of the best programs they have right here in San Diego that I just love so much, they're running 7 safe parking programs, meaning if you're living in your car with your family, your kids, your dogs, whatever, if you qualify, you can stay in these yards for, you know, up to 6 months, but have to be working, obviously, with a counselor who will help find you homes. And it's amazing to me to learn over the last several years that we've done this. These are people like you and me who, you know, for whatever reason, find themselves out of work. You know, you're talking middle-class people, 2 kids and a dog, and you're sleeping in your car because for 5 months, 6 months, you were looking for work.
You can't make, out of money.
Can't make your mortgage, can't make your rent, and you get put out. And it's really interesting because you see these people, you know, come in, and literally they're sleeping in an SUV with 2 kids and a dog. So we try and make it home-like. One of our yards, we've built a permanent facility with toilets and showers and so on. We try to allow for a lot of dignity. And in the other yards, we have porta showers and bodies that come along and that are there. And we feed hot meals a couple of nights a week. And I've met a number of people that have come through the program. And honestly, Jeff, they're just you and me having a bad day. So you try and make it as comfortable as possible. And it's they're secure. So people aren't breaking into them at night and they're not getting hassled by the authorities and so on. So
yeah. Well, those are great programs. Yeah. To your point, my wife's nonprofit focused on the homeless. And so kind of in tune with that. And I think society as a whole kind of has the wrong view. They kind of see the psychotic person on the corner and somehow all so homeless people look like that. And that's really just kind of the tip of the iceberg that you see. There's this whole other crew, like you're describing, that are folks that, in fact, seniors are like the number one folks going into homelessness, right? They Social Security can't keep up while saying the apartment to the car to, you know, to the street. And yeah, it's terrible.
And if they lose the car and they hit the streets, then there's very little chance that you're going to either keep the family together or that you're going to get them back into proper housing. So we work very hard to do that. We, as in JFS, we, while some of our people volunteer, JFS does the heavy lifting there. Our job is, you know, I look at our business as a manufacturer. Instead of manufacturing widgets, we manufacture capital.
We like that.
We only have one consumer for our product and we do the very best we can to serve them. And that's JFS San Diego, who really do an amazing job.
Wow, I love that. That's having a different philosophy about it all, right? That's just kind of thinking about it differently with great clarity, though, as to what your purpose is and what you're doing.
Yeah, it makes it easy to, you know, to engage the staff. It's wonderful people that work with us. Honestly, I'm so blessed. it makes it easier to communicate and inspire them by the mission, inspire them to the mission. And that's really what drives us forward every day. We have people that are committed and understand the need. You know, the guys who work in our auction yards, you know, you try and remind them, it's a hot day up there in Sacramento and you're pushing a car uphill. You're thinking to yourself, why am I doing this? Well, you know, it's in addition to earning a living, you just put somebody's dinner on the table that night, you just gave somebody's family a place to sleep. You just had somebody go out to a hospital and advocate for a senior who is unable to advocate for themselves to make sure they get the benefits they paid for all their lives.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the whole philosophy behind the Conscious Curiosity podcast and Conscious Capitalism. Exactly. Is the higher purpose. You know, are we just here trying to make some money? Is this a time for payment kind of ideas or something bigger and grander we're doing? And so the basic work you guys are doing is very mission driven and acts as a great as jet fuel to move things forward.
It's unfortunate we have to age so far to get that message. I mean,
it's just, well, we do live in America, so we are a capitalist society, and it's very important to us, right? Build the biggest house with the biggest gate around it, moat or whatever possible.
It is crazy, isn't it? I don't know what's happened to us. Hopefully we can find a better future as America goes forward with no political reference. I just hope that Americans as a whole can find a way to come together and put some of this acrimony aside and find the value of and the richness of this country and the bounty that is available to us when we think as a unit, which is to create equality for all.
Right. Because at the end of the day, if you're sitting on your deathbed, what are you thinking about? It's not how much money you made or your house. I mean, you're going to be thinking about your relationships and the things in life, those defining moments in your life that usually had to do with community or doing something of some service, right? So,
well, I'm assuming that's true. Having never died, I can't answer that question. But
I'm making a bad assumption.
Yeah, but I'm assuming that is, I hope that is correct. I hope that is correct. Hope we're thinking about the good moments.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit. I mean, you come out of the for-profit world. You were a CEO of various types of companies in different industries. And just before we started recording, I was sharing that, you know, we just had our CAUSE conference. And one of the mission of CAUSE is like, how do we connect for-profit companies for the nonprofits, right? How do we make that marriage? And we always struggle with getting the nonprofits to come to the party. So being on both sides of the camp now, what are your thoughts there? How do we change that?
Well, hang on. I have to dig deep and find my alternate personality here.
Go back in the day, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It is an emotional struggle, and it confounds me, to be honest with you, that so many nonprofits have taken up almost, and I don't mean this with any pejorative overtone. I hope I'm not offending anybody, but nonprofits have this sometimes unique perspective that, you know, raising money is something that they have to do, that they dread having to do, and that it's really dirty work. I'm sorry, I just can't agree with that for a couple of reasons. One is, how do you feel? How do you feel personally when you give somebody a gift you know they're going to really like? Found that gift.
Yeah, it makes me feel great, right? There's nothing better than that.
So I think as nonprofits, it's our duty to give people the opportunity to give, to share, and to have that great feeling, to participate in knowing that they're helping another human being. So I think it starts there, and I think you have to put your political leanings and your sort of feelings about all of this, about the value of money aside, and say, we have a job to do. And then it pays, literally and figuratively, to maybe take some advice from people who make money, if you will, or generate capital for their corporations or build products that engage people and want to make the exchange money for your service, to engage with those people to say, well, how does business do this? How do we do this? How can we run a more efficient operation? How can we spend less emotional time, less frustration, and just communicate the value of our CAUSE? And of course, the major organizations have learned how to do that, which is why they're so good at it. St. Jude, you know, $1.6 billion a year in fundraising. Mind you, look at the work they do. It's incredible. And if you ever have an opportunity to visit their campus in Memphis, I would urge you, it is a temple to how things should be done in the nonprofit arena. And the atmosphere is terrific. But even the small guys, right? We have, you know, thousands of little people. When I say little people, I mean little organizations, not small people, of course. But, you know, guys who run, you know, a dog rescue for three-legged spotted dogs, you know, with half tongues. You know, I don't know. It does get that granular
sometimes,
right? It does,
yeah.
Right?
Sometimes you have 15,000 of them.
Yeah, so that's what it takes. They need $30,000 for an entire budget for the year.
Right.
Yeah, but you're right. It's probably closer to 15. And so two or three vehicle donations, and they've made their year and so on. But I think taking the approach that you need a little bit of business help, a little bit of business acumen to attack the marketing program and recognize the value of your program and go out there and do it. I think there's a change afoot. We see it. on a national basis that people are beginning to adopt more business prudent processes, that they're beginning to embrace marketing instead of just going with their hands open, explaining the value of what a contribution actually does, so that you're not saying, okay, we're writing this because we feel guilty, or we're writing this because we know the person, and so on. Fundraising, I think, has to go way beyond that. And I think it's just like selling a vehicle or selling a home or, you know, selling a widget.
Got to have the ROI, right? The value of the transaction.
And there are plenty of people out there for every nonprofit, people who identify with your cause, who can get as passionate about your mission as you are. But in order to do that, you have to communicate, you have to market, you have to find a way to spread that message, and then give them a fundraising mechanism that works for them. We get donations, vehicle donations, from people that could not afford to write a check for a dollar, but you're helping them by getting them this vehicle out of their driveway that, you know, either they're not using or can't use anymore because we've taken the keys away from mom,
right,
and turning it into both a tax deduction, but moreover, turning it into capital. And you may think that car is just a piece of junk and not worth anything, but believe me, we have methods and ways of turning that vehicle into maximum dollars, whether it's dismantling it and selling the metal and the wiring and or the bits and pieces, or recycling it in some way, shape, or form, or pulling the electronics out and using it. Or
oh, wow. So this is, okay, so I didn't even think about that. I was thinking, okay, we got this vehicle, we sell the vehicle or whatever, scrap it or something. But I mean, you guys have taken it to a whole nother level.
Like, oh my gosh.
How do we squeeze everything out of the potential opportunity in front of us?
That's the job. I'm not going to waste your donation. When you give us a donation, for heaven's sakes, it's our job, it's our responsibility to make sure that we get the greatest amount of value for the nonprofit that you've gifted this, particularly when we're talking about cars, because Americans have such a relationship with their vehicles. We get stories. One of these days, I keep swearing I'm going to do this. One of these days, I'm going to produce a coffee table book with stories that people tell us about the cars they've donated.
Give us a story, Howard.
Well, I got a couple.
Give me a good one.
Well, you know, the obvious. Oh, my gosh, I drove my kids for 10 years to and from school. Finally, I drove them to university, and that was it. You know, I don't need this minivan anymore. But I think one of the most interesting stories, an Asian couple, a really sweet young couple, had a minivan, and they were driving to the hospital. They were having their first child. Got to the corner of, I don't know what the intersection was, but walk and don't walk. And she said, that's it. My water broke. This thing's coming one way or another. It was late into the night or early morning. And they stopped and parked the car right there at the red light that they were stuck at. He put it in park and they're in there. And of course,
had a baby.
And a police, you know, came along and said, oh, well, let us help here, right? And anyway, the child was born at the corner of walk and don't walk. And have a nice day. So they thought, you know, next kid's coming along, they're going to be better prepared. They got the same minivan. They're going to be better prepared. There's no question, right? They got the go bag. They're ready. And she's saying, well, I'm experiencing just now contraction. Let's go to the hospital, honey. They get to the same corner.
Get out of town.
I swear to God, they get to the same corner, walk and don't walk. And this kid says, I'm coming. And they had the second child. There's some PowerPoint or unusual energy. I don't know
what
you believe in. But boy, that child came screaming out. And so when they were donating the vehicle, they were, you know, telling the DSR, the donor reception agent, the story, and we like making notes on those things. And so they were, you know, kind of loath to part with the vehicle, but it had really done its job and they had to move on and so on. So the category of stories are incredible. Sad ones too, you know, my dad or my parent passed away or my husband.
It was a baby, yeah.
You know, and then we get the collectibles, and the collectibles are, we just got a 1939 Ford, incredible, just in incredible shape. I think the oldest one we got a 1929. I think we told the story on the video when we won the Ethics Award, which was lovely. We'd gotten this vehicle running, 1929. We made a video of it. We sent it up to the widow who gave it to us, and she called us in tears, saying it wasn't so much looking at it, but she said, when I heard it running, the sound of that motor reminded me of the Sunday drives my husband and I used to take in this vehicle with that motor ticking over in the background. And she was in tears. And those are the kinds of stories that you get and you go, you know, giving them the opportunity to gift this vehicle, even the ones you think are junk. You know, we repurpose these vehicles. Many of them come in with 100 or 200,000 miles and they've still got life left in them, right? So, you know, they go to a different category of individual, but still we're providing transportation for a lower income family or an immigrant family, you know, as they're
starting. It was your car right at this point, right? You were driving it, you were using it, right?
And it's nice. So it is terrific. We're getting, you know, a lot of stories back and fulfilling again.
It's very rewarding, it sounds like. So I'm going to take your answer a little bit, like the thinking of how you're running the business for-profit, nonprofit, at the end of the day, it's really not that different. It's really about having really clear purpose and direction as to what you're trying to get done with the organization, and then really doing all the appropriate business things that any business should be doing to help make this thing as valuable and profitable as possible.
What are you trying to, like, expose my secrets or something?
That is the goal.
Well, that is the goal. That is the goal. Okay, well,
here's the secrets, Howard. Don't hold back.
Here's the balloon bursting. I don't run this business any different than I ran any other, period. I believe.
Don't defile everybody.
Well, I believe, I think there are probably a couple of keys that have worked for me. I can't say that they work for everybody, but they have worked for me over the years. And look, I've had my failures along the way. I consider them to be lessons. Won't do that again. Or, gee, that didn't work out too well. But I think the basics never change. One, you have to start out with integrity, a great deal of integrity. And I'm not going to go into a lecture, but let's be honest, folks. Well, it's funny being honest about integrity, but let's be real candid. Integrity is what happens when nobody's looking. And if you don't understand that the oath you take for integrity is just a commitment to yourself, then you got a problem anyway. Nothing's going to help.
That's where it starts, yeah.
That's going to help you. So I think integrity, and I think before you take on a challenge like this, you got to go look in the mirror and say, what am I going to do here? We're not selling stock. We're not selling widgets. We're selling help. We're selling community involvement, right? Community owns a 501c3. We're engaged with and working with civic policy and working on behalf of the community. It's why we're allowed a tax exempt status, because we're contributing to the community in better and different ways. So one starts with integrity. Two, I think the next thing is transparency. And why transparency? Well, we've all got boards that we have to be accountable to and so on. And I think being accountable as a chief executive, whether it's a private company, still responsible to your family and responsible to your employees and still responsible to the community because you engage in commerce in the community. So transparency is important. What are you doing and how are you doing it? At CARS, we have a software program where every one of our partners can log on, takes them a second to log on, and they can see the status of their account. Every vehicle, every piece of property, every transportation solution we provided for them, everything is right there in front of them and it's online. They see what I see as a CEO and when I see it, just for their own nonprofit, but they have the same level of access as I do to every number that involves their organization. And I think that's important.
So no smoke and mirrors.
No smoke, no mirrors. This is what it is. You see the good days and you see the bad days. And most people understand that just like they do, we have good days and we have, days that don't always add up the way you want to. I think the next rule is if you believe in what you're doing, you got to stand behind it. And every now and again, we get our hiney kicked. We have an issue. What is frustrating is look at these organizations we deal with, right? They're all just extraordinary. And at the end of the day, we do a lot of good work. But the tow truck driver that shows up at your door, runs over your cat while he's leaving, right? So all this good work that we do across the country, all this reputation is just gone because of a tow truck driver. So I have a policy of every time we have an issue with a towing or somebody gets a ticket before the transition of the ownership at the DMV and they get the ticket and we have process to resolve all this. We stand 100% behind all this. We get a call, we get a problem, we fix it. I don't care if 1 year, 10 years later, it doesn't really matter. We've gone as far as, to hire lawyers and take people to court and resolve issues. You get some of these carnivorous tow companies that, tow cars and lock them up in these yards. And the people that bought the car, maybe off the auction, have just abandoned it. So the original owner is getting these bills for $3,000 worth of storage and so on. Sometimes we have to go and fight with them and say, yeah, but look, there's been a release of liability. You can't really get at the guy. But, they got hard hits. And usually they're used to bullying people and getting their
right,
way.
We
don't bully. We stand up for our donors 100%. So you got to stand up for your product 100%, no matter what it takes, what it costs. If it costs you a dollar, costs you two, you have to warrant and believe that what you do is of greater value. And that's one of the reasons we don't pay tax, right? As a community organization, we have to be prepared to eat the small stuff in order to be a benefit. So,
but that's true for for-profit too, right? You need to stand behind your product and what you're doing as a company, right?
100%. Yeah. But that's what we're saying, right? If you listen, these are not rules that are, this is like saying, look, pick any eight of the, Ten Commandments, follow them and be okay. This is really what it is. And of course, practicing sound fiscal policy, knowing when and how to say no, and when and how to say yes. And the other thing is, I think that's missing in nonprofit is, you talked about your wife being involved in a social enterprise. I think operating a social enterprise is one of the most important things you can do as a nonprofit, whether you're small or large. You look at somebody like Shrine miners, right? You may not know it, but there's a better than 50% chance that every head of lettuce you've ever brought into your house or every package of mushrooms you've ever brought into your house was grown by farms, lettuce and mushroom farms that are operated by Shriners Hospitals.
Oh, really?
A very smart organization, and they help to fund what they're doing by operating, you know, a properly sustained, ecologically correct farms to provide this kind of product. JFS's social enterprise is cars, right? And we generate all this revenue for them. And while we have our own board and while we operate separately, we understand that at the end of the day, you know, our proceeds go to support the activities of this large social service agency in the city of San Diego. And we're very proud of that. And we're very happy about that. Why? Because we love supporting our own hometown. But in addition to that, we know that from here, we're serving all these others. So you're absolutely right. If you look at the good principles that drive any for-profit business, be it private or public, they're the same principles, just that your product serves two purposes. It's to allow people to gift, but it's also so that the agency that's taking your gift can use it for the greater good.
Love that. You'd kind of mentioned this, the BBB. You're the winner this year of the Torch Awards here for ethics, which also I think they used to call it the Integrity Awards.
Yeah.
Maybe talk a little bit about why you guys went after that and what that means to your organization.
Well, when I started as a chief executive here, you know, the car donation space did not have what I would call a gilded edge reputation. There were a number of organizations across the land that perhaps didn't have the same degree of integrity we felt was important to be dealing with a lot of these organizations. And when I reached out and, you know, talked to some of the bigger ones that we wanted to do business with, you know, they responded, well, you know, maybe, yeah, later, some other time. So we did a little work and we found a number of organizations that we thought were not necessarily reputable. And we helped to encourage them to leave the business. And a couple we bought three of them and incorporated them into what we're doing. You know, we selected the staff that worked with them that we felt we wanted to hang on to, many of which are still with us. And the rest went away. So by the time we were all done with that, we had grown through acquisition. And like any business, we need to grow organically and through acquisition. And one of the biggest reasons for acquisition is if you want really good trained staff, you go buy somebody who's got a good trained staff.
Yeah, already doing it.
And so over the last 9 years, we've done our best to clean up the industry now. And I think we've arrived there. Many organizations now enjoy a good reputation and, you know, we help to, hopefully we've helped to do that. Even at our size, and we're quite reasonable for a nonprofit, every one of these folks I talked about who has a problem, but once the problem has been solved, I'll pick up the phone and call them. And they're stunned to be getting a call generally from the chief executive. We're just people, folks, you know, just like you, and we want to make sure you're happy.
It's just not the norm, Howard.
Well, it's the norm in my house. And we kibitz a little bit back and forth. And then I tell them the story about this is what we do and how we do it and appreciate your donation. And it went further than you think. And then I tell them about, and by the way, most tow truck drivers are wonderful people. They work hard. They pull up at these doors and they realize that they're picking up a donation and they're ladies and gentlemen about it and are incredible. But for the occasional one or two that don't do really well, I tell them, and then at the end of the day, our entire reputation was based on this, as you perceived in the beginning, and, you know, started to give us a very hard time and complain to the BBB or whomever. And they laugh and they say, my gosh, that's really incredible. And clearly you've done a great job for us and solved the problem. So I don't know where I was going with this, but there you go.
You got to have integrity, right? Well, you did a great job of talking about an industry that probably wasn't quite as ethical as we like to see it. And you guys came in and were able to turn that around and make this a stand-up industry now.
So I have a lot of support. Job. I've got it. Not only do I have a great staff, but our parent, and, you know, JFS. I mean, they're 109 years old without a blemish. I'm not going to be the guy, okay? Not me, maybe the next guy, but I am being very careful here to make sure that their integrity is not impugned because of anything we do. I think what they do is so important.
Love that. So you're working on a national basis here, obviously big focus in San Diego as well. What are you optimistic about? Where are things going that we should be excited about?
I'm optimistic about everything, but I guess, you know, I may be a little bit of a zealot when it comes to optimism. It helps.
It's part of your formula, Howard.
Well, it helps on the bad days to just say, well, hang on, what's the lesson here? And you know the expression, right? When you're walking through Hades, you keep your head down, keep walking. And one day, wait a minute, it's not as hot. And away you go. I'm optimistic about, again, I'm really apolitical here, but I'm optimistic about a change in leadership in the country. I don't necessarily agree with everybody who's assumed the helm, but I'm agree with the attitude that we do need some change. We do need to move beyond some of the, what I may consider overregulation from my previous days.
Yes.
And we need a little bit of help to inspire and stimulate the economy through the growth of business and maybe a little lighter touch on the taxes. And I think we may be seeing some of that over the next few years. But I'm also optimistic about the people in this country who, with all political stripes, rose up to say, we need a change. We don't know whether it'll be better or worse, but we have to try something. And the country came together as a whole to find the courage to try that out. And we'll see. It's a social experiment, right? I mean, that's what this country is. It's one big social experiment. I long for the days when, you know, the D's had it for a few years and the R's got it for a few, and then it went back and forth. But there was some respect and dignity.
Something happened in the middle, right?
Yeah. And we found balance. But the two sides would talk to each other. I think now it's just gotten a little bit crazy. So I'm optimistic that they're going to find some balance and the ability to talk to each other and, you know, maybe inspire a better behavior all the way around.
You know? I'm hopeful too. Too much of the, I think, the ends of the spectrum are wagging the tail here, running the dog, however next goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's so many people in the middle that's going, hey, let's just figure some stuff out, make some decisions and move forward here. That would be a wonderful thing.
Well, I think those of us in the middle, you know, probably are the majority. We just haven't bothered to get involved. And so, yeah, but that's it, right? I mean, that's life. The pendulum goes one way and then swings through, you know, a couple of years down the road, we'll be doing the same thing going the other way.
Yeah, we'll be looking for change in 2 years, right?
So I guess if I have to say what I'm optimistic is about, I'm optimistic about the people who live in this country. I'm optimistic about America's future. I'm optimistic about life in general.
Love that.
As an OG.
I would love to promote something you're involved in that I saw, mainly Mozart.
Oh my gosh. You've done your research.
What is that, Howard?
Well, mainly Mozart is an organization here in town that, well, where do I begin? Well, first off, it's an organization that not just preserves the value of classical music, but in the summer, during the summer, most major civic orchestras, their philharmonics and their city orchestras are shut down. And so you've got all of these professional musicians, I mean, the best of the best in the country, are all looking for something to do. Well, for, you know, 20, 35 years, mainly Mozart has been assembling the best of the best and putting together a summer orchestra, which, while they are in session, are considered to be the best philharmonic orchestra on the face of the globe.
So like the all-star team.
It is the all-star. So We get guys who are conductors of their own symphonies, like Teddy Abrams in Louisville. And he comes in and you know, plays the piano. And so it's funny because you've got these band leaders or orchestra leaders, not even band leaders, but these orchestra leaders, you know, are all following some other, you know, guy or woman who is leading. And so we have these summer concerts, and they were the first to do outdoor entertainment for people to get together, come in your car, and we'll have an outdoor concert. And then through the year, they've got a thing called Club Amadeus where you can come in. We have these small curated concerts where you can actually get up close and talk to the orchestra people. Last week, we had a thing, and we managed to capture, if you will, some of the Philadelphia Philharmonic. They were on their way back from a tour of China and transitioning through here. And so we managed to get four of them actually in for an incredible concert.
Oh, nice.
A little bit. And coming on the 15th of March is our Culinary Concerto, which supports mainly Mozart, but also we have this 350-piece youth orchestra with little guys, middle guys, and teens. And producing some really great
future,
some really great classical music artists, many of whom, you know, on the spectrum, or some of whom are on the spectrum, perfect pitch, incredible. And we're on both sides of the border. This is transnational.
We
kids from Tijuana and kids from here and interact. And this Culinary Concerto, now this is really exciting, it is amazing, right? 29 tables, 12 people, 29 celebrity chefs, and I mean people with James Beard Awards, people that have won MasterChef, people that have won Top Chef, Michelin stars. When we say, you know, celebrity chefs, we're not talking about Bob from the corner who everybody in the neighborhood knows.
Right.
Every table gets their own chef, so they do their own menu. So every table is going to have a different menu, and each one is paired with a vintner. So they have specifically, and the vintner has to themselves come and actually pour and explain the wine.
Oh, wow.
And then, of course, we have all kinds of entertainment. So last year, we had the grandson of the founder of Lauterbach, who is now running one of the best chocolate companies in the world, came from Switzerland. Our entertainment was a Eurovision winner, a violinist. He made a chocolate violin, white, dark, and milk chocolate with strings made out of German gummy bears and presented it. It was incredible. So that's what it is. So it's the preservation of, but it's also for the education of the kids and the kids orchestra, but it's mainly for the preservation of the music.
We'll put a link in the podcast info. So
well, thank you.
Come check that out. That'd be great.
Thank you. My wife and I are chairs this year, so we're hoping not to embarrass ourselves and do a good job.
I'm sure you will.
Well, we're trying.
Well, time to wrap it up, Howard. I always like to end with, what's the big idea? What's the one idea? If no one heard anything else, here's the one thing you want them to remember.
Be good. Just be good. Be kind. Know that everything you do and everybody you touch, whether it's a small pebble or a big rock, when you drop it in the pond, it has ripples.
Oh, I love that. Thank you very much. That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming in today. Certainly appreciate all the amazing work you're doing and all your insights and things you shared here today, both for us for-profit guys and the nonprofit crowd out here to grab onto some of those thoughts and move forward. So
thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
So that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, where we're all counting on you.